Welcome to Studio B Live. I'm David Burns, your host for the program today. Good to be along with you, and thanks for tuning in to Studio B Live. It's brought to you by Long Lane Honeybee Farms, the honeybee apiaries of my wife and I and our family, and we just like sharing some information with you on a regular basis about beekeeping, a place where you can just listen and learn more and be somewhat entertained, hopefully, on beekeeping. So we do appreciate you tuning in today and listening to our broadcast. Now, let me tell you, it's very important that we have your input. We'd love for you to call in and leave your question on our Studio B Live line. You'd simply wait for the tone, leave your question, and then we'll have fun playing it back on the air and answering it so that you can hear the answer, and many people like you asking the same question can hear the answer as well. Now, since we obtained our second line for these types of questions, we have not got enough questions to justify the second line, but we're keeping it in hopes that you'll call. We get the silliest calls on our Studio B Live line that have nothing to do with our questions. It's just like, you know, people dial the wrong number. We keep getting calls asking for the wrong, you know, no one lives here by that name. And we homeschool our children, and yet we get a call like this today.
Hello, this is Guy Vanicky, superintendent of the schools, calling to report the Catlin schools will be closed on Thursday, January 15th. Thank you.
It has nothing to do with beekeeping. All right, so we do need you to call. All right, you can see our desperate situation we're in. We only get calls from school principals. And I think that was a recording. All right, so here's the telephone number. We'd love for you to call us and ask your question. The number is 217-427-2430. That's right, 217-427-2430. A question you're dying to ask, don't know where to find the answer to it at, hey, give us a call and we'll play it on our next broadcast and answer your question. We'll have fun doing it. Well, even though we don't get a lot through the answering service there, we do get a lot through email. Here is a email that came in today from Don, who says, I'm considering entering into the beekeeping business and am just starting to do some research. I found your site. I am thankful to see such forthrightness. I especially like that you are a Christian family. I have read the first few lessons and skimmed others, looking for answers to a few questions that I did not find answers to. Perhaps you would be so kind. One, how much honey can you expect a hive to produce? And two, how often and how long? Three, is there a good market for selling end product? He's going to hold off asking more questions after I answer those first three. And I will respond to those three, but let me just say this. Ooh, yeah. Good question. It is a question that almost everybody that gets started in beekeeping will ask. How much honey can I expect my hive to produce? Well, it's not like that. It's not so exact and scientific that you just don't know. I mean, it depends on the bees. It depends on the climate, the weather, the nectar source in your area. And when I answer that question, it just has to be in generalities. It has to be, well, if everything goes good, you really can't expect too much the first year because the bees are drawing out their comb. They're transferring the intake of nectar into wax and building comb. The second year, they don't have to build comb, so they can take the nectar and store it. But that first year, you just don't know what to expect. You can expect, oh my goodness, they almost probably don't have enough to make it through the winter, all the way up to 200 pounds on a first year package. You just never know. Now, second year hive, if they're going good and the season is great, you know, the weather's been cooperative, the nectar is strong, the bees are healthy, maybe you can expect 75 to 100 to 150 pounds of honey, maybe 200 pounds of honey. On a perfect year, who knows? The sky's the limit. You just don't know. There's so many variables. And I will say this about how much honey a hive can produce. You know, it has a lot to do with the weather, because bees only fly when it's not raining. So if you have a real rainy season, you're going to struggle with getting the honey that you want, because they can't fly. The only way they get nectar back in the hive is to go out and get it, and that means flying on nice days. So we always do better in drier seasons than we do rainy, wet seasons. So if we had a real wet summer, we don't get as much honey as we have a dry summer. I know it sounds crazy. I'm not talking about a terrible drought where the grass is just burned up and your yard looks like a baseball diamond. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying it can be pretty dry and still the bees do really well. They do better. Second part of that question is how long and how often. I think I answered it in the first part. As long as there's nectar coming in, you can expect them to keep producing the honey. And three, is there a good market for selling end product? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's incredible. We sell out of our honey every year. It's incredible. Did I say that it was incredible? Now, you might have to do a little footwork. You might have to do a little contact. You might have to build clientele. You may have to spend a year to get yourself known as somebody that's selling honey. But yes, you can do very well selling that honey, for sure. And if you get bigger and bigger and bigger, you can always start talking to grocery stores and wineries and certain novelty shops, and you can, and you know, hardware stores. Whew, you'll just find all kind of avenues out there to sell your honey. Yes, you will. And another email comes from Pete, and he says, do you by chance know where I can find out where to purchase Carniolan packaged bees? It seems very hard to find them on the net. Your help would be greatly appreciated. I don't think it's hard to find. I doubt it. I mean, the packages of bees, of course, may not be, the package may not be Carniolan, but the queen is what you're trying to find to be a Carniolan. And I've seen some packaged bee providers with Carniolan queens, but mostly you're going to find Italians. Probably mainly because Italians are the old standby. They're known to be gentle and known to be good honey producers. And they just, you know how gas prices went up because speculators speculated that it would? I think Italians are famous. Italian honeybees are well known and famous because somebody said that they're famous. So Carniolans are just now kind of getting a better name built up for themselves. But as I've always said this, it's been at least a year now. It sounds like I've said it for 200 years. But if you put a Carniolan next to an Italian and side by side, see how they compare, I think one year the Italian may win, the next year the Carniolan may win. They are a lot alike in honey production. I think Carniolans are more gentle, and I enjoy them more than I do Italians. And I think they have some characteristics that I enjoy that I know that the Italians don't have, such as the Italians can rob a lot, and the Carniolans are not much to think about when it comes to robbing. Plus, the Carniolan, in my opinion, gets through the winter better than the Italian bee. There you go.
Well, even if you can't find packages of that, all you have to do is requeen with a Carniolan when the time comes.
You know, that's a good point, yeah. Ditch the old Italian queen, or keep her in a nook and save her for a rainy day, and call us up and get one of our good queens. And though we raise mutts that are open-air mated, we do selective breeding, and we have a very good queen. And you'll find it to be a dark queen, more Carniolan than Italian, and you'll like it a lot. Okay, Sherry, here's an email. Let's see if you can guess where it came from by the greeting. Aloha, David.
Hawaii, perhaps?
Oh, Aloha, David. Great site. I have a question that I can't find anything close on the net. So there you go. We get to answer a question that has not been answered on the internet. Okay, here it is. I was a beekeeper for many years, working in the field and also in the honey house, large operation here in Hawaii, 5,000 hives.
Wow.
Yeah, Powers Apiaries. I received many stings. My question, does the bee venom stay in your system? I am 63 years old and no signs of arthritis or joint pain. And was wondering if those little darlings may have had something to do with it. I believe this may have something to do with my good health, but seek another opinion.
Oh, by all means, that's what it was.
Well, now to be legal, you have to say, in my opinion.
In my unprofessional and medical opinion, of course it does.
Yeah, because it's, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion. You can't be sued for your opinion, you know. But, yeah, we don't want to say that everybody that goes out and gets stung, you're going to have a healthy life and never have arthritis or joint pain. But it has been proven and documented by people with arthritis that the bee stings, the venom, bee venom therapy has been very helpful to them. And I believe that, too. Sherry and I both have experienced different things over the years that bee stings have alleviated. So we're right with you there, Mary. We believe it.
And you can Google many sites and read about, it's called apitherapy, isn't it?
You know, I gave the website once in a previous broadcast, right? And they have medical doctors that actually, you know, give the information for you.
Oh, yeah, and there are doctors now that will give people bee stings. You know, I don't know exactly if you, you know, work with a beekeeper and have the beekeeper bring the bee to the doctor's office. I don't know exactly how it's done, but there are some doctors who employ that in their practices.
Yeah, that's neat. Oh, she also says, has the virus mite affected your area? I sure hope not. It is in, how do you say that, city in Hawaii? Hilo? Hilo? H-I-L-O?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, it says it is, but now they are going to start destroying hives to prevent it from spreading across the islands. Lots of crops are at stake. So sad. Oh, yeah, we've had the mites for 20 years, and learning to live with them, don't like them, wish we didn't have them. They do spread viruses, and they can be hard on hives. Hard to get rid of, hard to keep out, but it's like everything else. You learn to deal with it, and you just keep on being a good beekeeper. Here's an email from Mark from North Carolina. Your site is great. Lots of info. Wish you were closer to North Carolina. I do too. Right now, on January the 14th, I wish I would lived in North Carolina because it's cold outside.
What is the temperature outside?
Well, I don't know for sure. See, I have this outdoor thermometer next to the bee lab here. And it must be picking up some heat from the buildings.
Oh, yeah.
It says 25.3 degrees.
No.
But actually, it's in the single digits. I think it's 5 degrees at somebody's airport.
Tomorrow, the high is zero.
Yeah, tomorrow, the high is nothing. I mean,
it's nothing.
I don't even think I'm going to do anything tomorrow. I can't do anything because if the temperature never gets to something, then you can't do anything. You have to do nothing because the temperature is nothing. You can only do what the temperature does.
Okay.
See, when it's 30, you do 30% of work. When it's 80, you do 80% of work. People work more. This.
All right. Well, I'm all for that.
All right. Zero. And then 17 below tomorrow night, Sherry.
Oh, there you go. 17 below.
We'll talk about that in a minute, but I want to finish Mark's email. All right. North Carolina. Got two hives, just starting and learning as I go. An acquaintance has asked several times if I would put one of my hives on his property for pollination for his garden. He has offered to pay. I intend to purchase more hives this spring, but not sure if I want to risk one of my hives one of my existing hives. Things are going so well. I'm not sure if I want to risk putting them in pollination. Any input for me? What's the going rate of pollination? How do I protect my bees? And what about liability issues? Thanks for your help in advance. You know, we have some hives in pollination, and my experience has not been good. Two of them got washed down a
creek.
A creek, washed away in a creek. They were in an apple orchard, and they got washed away. And the ones I have in melon pollination keep dying and keep having to throw packages back in there.
Well, yeah, and they don't tend to the area. They don't keep it mowed down and everything, and so that makes it really hard to get to them and do anything to them.
Yeah, the honey production isn't all that fabulous usually either when you're in pollination, so you don't really expect to get any honey from hives that are in pollination. And you have all the other issues of if they're far away or any distance away, you're not going to check them as often, so they could probably lose their queen, and you'd never know it until they become queenless and start having a laying worker, and by that time it's going to be a battle to right the hive again. And I'm shying away from pollination, Mark. And the guys that have the big semis full of bees that take them to California, that's a different story, because that's, they've done the math, they've done the work, and they can really get, you know, a couple hundred dollars almost for one deep box on the almond trees out there. And so if you're doing it big time like that, you could probably make good money at it. But how do you protect your bees? I assume you mean that people are going to use poison on their crops and the bees may take it back to the hive. You just have to work out a deal with the guy that has a garden and say, don't use 7. If you do, use liquid 7 late at night. And what about liability issues? I guess he means that what if one of his bees stings somebody at the house? I'll tell you, Mark, about liability of bees. You hear that a lot, but there's not much to that. I mean, if a bee stings somebody and they say it's your box and you have to go to court because maybe they're going to sue you because they got stung by your bee, it's not going to hold up in court. You know, you can buy insurance, and some beekeepers have insurance where, all they do is supply a team of lawyers to go in and say, can you prove beyond a doubt that our client who owned the bees was negligent and actually caused his bees to sting you? Did he say, sick 'em? And if he did, it would hold up in court. But if it doesn't, it's dismissed.
And they have to check their back, too, and see if their brand is on their back.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You know, we're fortunate here, Sherry, because we have a real nice beekeeper about a mile away. Another beekeeper, you know, we're nice. And so she has about 4 hives. So if anybody gets stung, I could always say, hey, bees fly 3 miles. You don't know if it's my bee. And there's wild bees in the woods and stuff. So it's... liability is just not one of those things you want to spend a lot of time worrying about. I mean, you don't want to be stupid. You don't want to, you know, let your bees pester people. But, you know, if you're responsible and you're following the city or, you know, the county codes and all, then you're going to be okay. Don't worry about it.
Well, I think pollination is certainly something that is a benefit to where we live. I guess there's some folks who, I was talking to somebody the other day who said he was growing. What did he say he was growing? I think it must have been melons or something like that. And he said he checked all summer long and he never found a bee ever all summer long. And so he was trying to put up his own beehives. And I think probably unless you're real close to these people, because you have to figure in the cost of gas, driving back and forth, you need to check on those, make sure they're, you know, being fed if it's early enough in the year, and get the honey and all that kind of stuff. But in the end, I think it probably is very beneficial to encourage people to have their own beehives.
Boy, that's true. There's one gentleman that I pollinate his melon patch. You know, it's not a big melon patch, maybe 5-10 acres worth. And this year, I'm going to tell him, I'm pulling out. Unless you want to pay me, and that's another question Mark asked was, how much do you charge? Boy, it's not worth it for me unless someone's going to pay $100 a hive. Seriously, you got to still check it. You got to drive down there. You should check it every 2 weeks. And that, you know, if it's going to be far away, you got gas and time, and you got a package or the hive box you've paid money for. And if it dies, you get the picture, you know. So I would not do it for less than $100. If somebody wants to pay $100 or up, I'm interested.
Yeah, and I think there's a certain ratio too, isn't it? Like one hive per acre or one hive per acre and a half, something like that. So if they've got a very large orchard, you know, say 10 acres, you're talking about probably needing to put 10 hives on it. So that's, you know, it's a lot. It gets to be a lot.
Yeah, and I think the almond growers are required by insurance to have, what is it, one? I think it's, there it is, two hives per acre. Yeah, two hives per acre to actually make an insurance claim that, you know, pollination didn't work or something like that. So that's important. Okay, let's take a look, see if there's any other email that may be of interest here. So people might be able to learn something from our answer. Strolling through here. I was thinking of one more email that I was going to answer, Sherry, but now it escapes me. I can't remember what it was. Oh, I remember, about the lady that took the hive and put it in the garage and all that, you know. Oh, yeah, okay, so let me see if I can find that one. That was interesting, wasn't it? That came in yesterday, so let me go to yesterday's mail. This is where you have somebody else say something, but I'll just keep... Okay, here it is. Okay, here's a person that, and I won't say her name. She says, I've gotten our first two hives last spring and were unable to prevent one of them from swarming. Now, if that's not horrific news, here are some that may cause some shudders. Since both of our hives were rather light and the cluster small and likely unable to survive through the winter, we've moved them inside. Oh, boy. Whenever we hear that, we kind of like grit our teeth, you know. It's like...
She makes it sound like she moved them in the kitchen.
Yeah, they're in the bedroom next to the dresser, you know. I don't know. We put them in the bathroom next to the bathtub.
Our hives are very nice, but I don't know if you actually want to make furniture out of them.
It does sound like a nice thing to do. You let the dogs in when it's cold.
I do.
Okay. Now, the two hives were moved into the workshop, an unused space with a heater to keep it at an even 50 degrees.
Ooh.
Much too hot, isn't it? Pollen cake, syrup, and water sources were provided.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were going to go, ooh, again.
All I can think of is, you know, the one thing that comes to mind now is... Bee poop. That's the only thing that can come to my mind. As a woman, that's the only thing I can think of, because I've had lots of babies, and I know when you feed them lots of food, that's what you get in the end.
You know, that is so true, and we had that hilarious episode where we talked about bee poop in the bee lab here, and you're going to listen to that. But, yeah, that's right. The more you feed them, the more you give them water. Uh-oh. Yeah. Well, she says, let me skip this part. Let's see. Okay, they've been inside for about 2 weeks now. The room which contained them now also contains about 200 to 300 dead bees. But the colonies themselves seem to be doing quite well. The bees are sluggish and don't fly around all that much, but they don't exactly cluster either. My thoughts are that if the queen keeps laying throughout the winter, that they have enough food, and if they are kept at a high enough temperature to get to the food, there should be no problem with a loss of adult workers. Any feedback would be appreciated. Well, all right. I've said this in a previous broadcast, but I know that some of you are brand new and wouldn't dare listen to a past one when there's a new one. Or you just don't want to bother to try to find out which one I talked about this beforehand. But look, you have to understand... 50-degree room is too warm to put a beehive inside.
That's really warm.
Yeah, that's really warm. And because...
It's just 60 here where I'm sitting in this room, and it's warm.
It's because you're sitting on a heater.
Well, what? Those bees are, too. She said they had a heater in there.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, 50 degrees. So the temperature that you want to shoot for is 35 to 40-degree room. If you're going to keep them inside, don't let them break cluster.
Really, do people Are you supposed to bring bees inside?
Absolutely not. But some people way up north, they have, well, I can't think of the name now, but they actually have bee buildings that they move their bees into during the winter.
Seriously?
Yeah, in Canada and probably Alaska or somewhere. I know Canada does. But as I've said before, these are buildings that really had to be kept controlled. This is interesting because if you're going to keep it 40 degrees, that means you have to keep the humidity pretty low too, I think around 40%. And you have to keep air moving through this building. So, you know, bees need fresh air. And if you put a lot of hives, now she's probably only got, what'd she say, two? But some of these beekeepers have 500 hives in a building. And at the heat, they have to run the air conditioners to blow this hot air out of there. Now, if you get a 70-degree day or a 60-degree day in January, and that house gets warm, it gets above 40, now you got to have all this air conditioning system kick on. So you got to keep the building 40 degrees. I don't know any air conditioning that keeps buildings 40 degrees. Do you? I mean, air conditioning air is like usually 20 degrees cooler than the outside. You know, it's like 58 at the most, you know. Yeah. I mean, run your air all day. I don't know if you can get a building to 40 degrees. But maybe you can, but I wouldn't want to pay the electric bill. So there you go. It's too hot in your room. 50 degrees is bad for the bees. They've broke cluster, and they're going to fly out. And when they fly out in a building, bees have no sense of direction. They almost can never make it back into the hive because they use the sun, they use landmarks. So when they come out in your building, the only place they're going to go is to the window where there's light or to a light bulb and go bzz, 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 until they knock themselves out and die at the base of the window or exhaust themselves by the light. Not getting through the light bulb. It doesn't work.
Well, you know, one thing to compare that to is when we bring in honey supers, and we have a lot of bees that fly along with the honey supers. They never stay with the honey supers. Like you said, they always go for the light, they always go for the window, but you would never see them congregating back in the honey super, even though that's where they came from.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. So, okay, so if you're going to keep them in that workroom, go ahead and lower it down to 35 degrees would be my recommendation. It's my opinion. Get them to cluster. You want them in the box and not come out. Don't let them out. And if they come out when it's 35, lower it down to 30 in the room because they're making a lot of heat in that box, and you want them to stay inside at about 35 to 40 degree in the room. And I would cover all your windows so there's no light. Never turn the light on, and make sure that, you know, on a warm day, if it's going to get up to 60, you're going to have to pick up the box and take it outside. Don't open a door and think they're going to fly out the door. They won't do it. You got to take the box outside, and then you can't move it back. You cannot move it back in until they recluster really tight again. It's a mess. It's scary. It's risky.
Yeah, you know, you understand why people want to do that, though, because it is a big investment by the time, you know, you buy the hive and you get your bees. And some people get very attached to any living thing, but bees are meant to be outside, and there's no way that they're ever going to get acclimated to the weather taking them inside. And, I mean, you know, gosh, you know, what do you do? You know, this person has got one or two, but what are you going to do once you get five or six? You know, it's just not, it's understandable why people would want to do that, but it's not a good idea.
Yeah, and the other part of this is feeding them. Here it is in January, and she's feeding them. You know, we don't want to make this person like a bad person. She's heroic for wanting to save her bees, and I'm just trying to, I'm not saying that, I'm not speaking negatively toward her. I'm speaking negatively toward how this type of interaction can be negative toward the bees. But when you feed them food like pollen patties and water and sugar this time of the year, something is going to happen. And that is the older bees tell the queen that, hey, mom, there's plenty of pollen, there's plenty of nectar coming in, you can start laying. Well, if she starts laying more because of the incoming food, then you can never stop feeding them, or else you've set her up for failure because she starts laying eggs, brood starts developing, and yet if you cut supplies off, she's going to lose her brood because they can't take care of it. So it's like having a paper route. Once you start this, you got to, she's going to have to do this all the way until probably April now. Wow.
Yeah, you'd have to keep on feeding them. It's the same way when you bring them home in the spring. And we always tell people, if you have to feed them because you don't have any flowers growing, that's one thing. But the minute you see a dandelion pop up, you've got to stop, or you're just going to end up getting lazy bees that expect you to feed them all the time. And that's not the kind of, you don't want honey like that.
Yeah, and there are probably some people listening saying, well, that's not what they told me. They told me that as long as my bees were pulling wax out, making their comb, I should keep feeding them sugar water. That is a philosophy. It does seem to be reasonable. They do need to convert that that sugar water into wax to make, you know, draw out their foundation. But we just let nature do it. We figure that as long as there's, like Sherry said, dandelions, and before dandelions are maple trees, if they don't get killed by the frost, maple trees are wonderful. And then there's a lot of stuff out there. Bees know how to do what they do without you giving them table sugar to do it with. So we don't feed once we see flowers. We make the bees go out there and get it.
Now, what about putting bees in a greenhouse?
Oh, same thing. That's what that broadcast was.
Well, I need to go back and listen to our broadcast.
Yeah, I think you were here. I think you did it with me. The lady that, she said, what about putting a hive in a greenhouse to pollinate the stuff in the greenhouse? And I said, they're just going to fly to the top of the greenhouse and die.
Oh, that is.
Remember that?
I do remember that. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Now, there are some people who successfully have been able to put them, like, in the side of a barn or something, and they come and go. There was a fellow last year that bought one of our hives, and that's what he did. He put it right in the wall of a barn so that the entrance was actually, you know, part of the wall, and they came in and out like that. But I don't know. That would be too hot in the summertime, though, wouldn't it?
You mean like it was – he described it to me, and I thought he was referring to it like an open lean-to, like a lean-to to a barn that was open rather than a door or a window.
I thought he said he put it in the very, very top of the barn, but that may be right.
Well, that'd be tough to work that hive, wouldn't it? I'm going to go check for honey. I'm going to climb up to the top of my barn. But here's the thing about that. It would work – no, it wouldn't work if they were inside. If you had a real big opened area, like if you never closed the big barn door, if it was a huge door, and the bees, if you installed your package there, and the bees immediately learned to go in and out that door, maybe. I would still be scared about them getting trapped inside. But if you moved them in a barn, yeah, they're going to go for all the windows. Without finding that door, you're going to lose a lot of bees. It'd be bad.
And then your cows are going to get cold.
Why is that?
Because you left the big barn doors open.
Oh, yeah, I know. Why have a barn if you're going to keep the doors open for the bees? Well, another part of her question is she says if, you know, she keeps the temperature right and the food coming in, there should be no problem with the loss of adult workers. In other words, the 300 bees that are out there dead. She says it's probably not going to be a big deal. Well, certainly, I guess she means older workers, but I don't want to lose bees because they're flying and taking a potty break and can't come back in. They may not be adult workers. These may be just bees that you need in there to keep the brood warm. And in our hives, and those of you that are listening that have your hives in the winter air right now, the older bees are the ones generating most of the heat. They're the hard-working heat providers. And the way they do this is that they eat a bunch of honey, and they use that honey to as a carbohydrate so they can shiver. And they shiver.
That's good sound effects.
Yeah. And they shiver.
Really?
And they rev up their little muscles and twitch them, and they produce heat. And can you say redneck without being intimidating people or making people feel bad? Because I call a package B a redneck heater. Is that offensive to say that? I don't know what's politically correct or not. I'm from the South. Well, I come from 13 generations of rednecks, okay. So it's okay.
If you are a redneck, you can use the term redneck, yes.
I think that's true. But no, it is they produce a lot of heat. But they eat honey to produce that heat. Now, tonight it's going to get down to zero. No, below, I think 7 below tonight. So they will make a real tight cluster, let's say the cluster is the size of a basketball and a half, then tonight it's going to be the size of a baseball. I'm just kidding. It's not that small, but it will be much smaller. It'll be twice as small because they're going to get tighter to stay warm. Mm-hmm. And tonight they will just go through a difficult time of producing, keeping the brood, if there's any brood in there laid. They'll really have to work hard to keep that cluster and the queen 80 to 90 degrees tonight. So don't try to put the bees inside buildings or cellars. Our basement is about 56 degrees, so bees would be flying out of their hive, into the furnace, into our bedrooms, up the pipes, through the walls. It'd be a mess. It would be a mess.
Folks, we need you to call in to Studio Bee Life. We need your questions. We like to see them on email, but we'd also like to hear your voices. And here's a special thing for you to know. This phone line is not in our house. So, you know, you could call like at 1 o'clock in the morning and leave your message, and we would never hear the phone ring. But then we'd come in the next morning and we'd hear your beautiful voice on the answering machine. So I know how some of you are shy and you're like, oh, I don't want to call in because people are listening, but no one will ever hear it. So we need you to call 217-427-4230. I don't want...
217-427.
What is it?
2430.
I asked you and you told me I was right the first time, but you weren't.
Well, you know how you invert numbers? I must have just flipped.
You do. You invert numbers all the time. It's 217-427-2430. Because we don't want to hear the principal again tomorrow. So call in your questions, because these are so much nicer. Oh, hey, David has got this really cool gadget that he bought this week, and I want him to tell you all what it is and what it does.
Okay, Sherry, I'll tell the folks about this. It's a really neat thing that helps me do some experiments on the hive. And it is called THUM, THUM, Temperature Humidity USB Monitor. And it is really a very scientific device to help us know more about what goes on inside the hive. And it is manufactured, designed, and created by Practical Design Group of South Dakota. And it's very very helpful to us here. And what we are using it for is monitoring particularly the temperature, the dew point, and the relative humidity inside a hive. Because we are actually using different tops and different devices that we are using on the top of a hive in the wintertime to see what kind of temperature and what kind of moisture that we're getting in a hive. And so we can, this product, this device, is we had to modify it a little bit. We worked with the company that makes them, and they actually informed us of what we should do to it in order for it to work properly inside a beehive, because it's so sensitive. Like the temperature, I'm looking at it now, and this might be interesting for some of you to understand, but in this particular hive, it has two deep hive bodies. The cluster is probably mainly up in the second deep hive body. And above the hive body is a medium Illinois super, and that's 6 5/8. So about, you know, a little over 6 inches above the cluster. And so this monitoring device is actually not directly on at the top of the cluster, but it's actually, yeah, it's actually 6 inches above the cluster. Although the top, you know, top part of the cluster has made their way up into the top part of that honey super. They'll go up there and get honey. Now, to give you an idea about this particular hive, the outside temperature right now is 5 degrees, and inside this beehive, you know, a few inches above the cluster. So we're only picking up the heat above the cluster, not even in the cluster, but above it. The temperature is 28.128. That's how specific this thing is. 28 degrees, a few inches above the cluster. And we know that. We know that even the bees on the outside of the cluster, the edge of the cluster, can actually reach freezing temperatures and have to be brought back into the cluster. They kind of rotate in and out. The center of the cluster is where the heat is. And the relative humidity in this particular hive right now is 50.71%. This program is neat. It graphs. It has a chart that's constantly rolling. It takes a reading every... I've got it set to take a reading every 60 seconds. And it will graph. It shows on screen. It, like I said, it's a USB connection. I've got a wire running from my hive, a USB wire, running from the wire from the hive into the laptop inside our bee lab, and we have our experimental hive just outside the bee lab, and so we can put different types of tops, different types of top covers, inner covers, vented, not vented, and we can monitor the actual humidity. And one thing that I'm learning that's fascinating, what I've watched this hive do, is that they regulate the humidity. And I was reading about this a few days ago, and nobody knows how and nobody knows why that bees are able to regulate the humidity, but they do. You know, I've always advocated that too much humidity in the hive is really bad in the wintertime because it can drip back down onto the hive. And actually, tomorrow is going to be the perfect day for me to... do some photography. I'll be popping tops off. Yeah, it sounds crazy. You know, 0 degrees outside, I'm taking the tops off of hives. But I'm only going to take the top off just long enough to take a picture of the underside of both the top cover, the inner cover, to see if there are stalactites of moisture that froze on that area. And that if so, then you know that when it thaws out and it gets warm again, that's going to drip on the bees. So we're going to do a lot of experiments tomorrow in the frigid cold temperature, but this I've got several studies going on right now. We are experimenting with several different kinds of materials, and I documented this in one of my recent basic beekeeping lessons where I showed you how to make a top cover with the corrugated plastic and then the padding that you use under flooring inside a top cover. That has proven to be very successful. No moisture is developing in the top of that hive on that area, so that's really good. We feel like we really hit on something positive there. But we have some other hives tomorrow that have just a plain inner cover, top cover. We have some that just have a top cover, no inner cover. And so that's what we're going to be looking at tomorrow and see what kind of moisture that has frozen on the top there. And the dew point is 13.12 Fahrenheit on this particular hive. So this is a neat device. It costs around $130 for the wire, the pickup device, and the software. You install the software. And for those of, you know, if you're just a beekeeper and you got a hive or two and you're not really trying to build anything to experiment with, it's probably not worth your while to buy this. But if you are someone that does a lot of work with bees, experimenting with bees, or experimenting making different types of boxes or hive top covers, it might be worth your investment to pick up one of these Thumbs temperature humidity USB monitoring device, and you can do your own experiments and see what's up. I'm looking at the graph here, by the way. Relative humidity, let's see. About 20 minutes ago, the relative humidity peaked at 65%, and then slowly over the last 20 minutes, it's been dropping. It has dropped all the way down to 40% about 10 minutes ago, and now it seems to be leveling off at 45% humidity. Now, keep in mind that bees do need humidity if they're raising brood. That brood does need to be kept humid in the cluster where the heat is. And so right now it's still about 45% humidity in the hive. But it's a cold night, so we've had a lot of fun with that little device. Well, we've had a great week this week taking Package B orders, and we love it when you call in and order your Package Bs or your Nooks or your Queens ahead of time. Woo, it's great. Oh, and when you order your hives ahead of time, we know that we can survive the spring because some of you have placed your orders in early, and we can get those out to you before the rush, because when it gets to be February, March, April, May, and June, oh my goodness, it's a busy time of the year. I keep hearing more and more suppliers and manufacturers tell us that there's a big demand on all of these things, big demand of packages going into the California, into pollination, kind of put a big demand on Package Bs this year. So do call early. We don't want you to be caught wishing you would have called after all the packages are gone. And I only have and will only be making a limited number of Nooks. So those of you who are interested in a five-frame Nook, you do need to call and place that order early. I'm only going to do about 50 Nooks this year. And it wouldn't hurt a thing if you want to call and reserve your queen. If you want to try one of our queens, put your name on the list, because I know we're going to sell out again of our queens. And I'd hate for you to feel bad that you were left out. So get an early jump on it. And by all means, do keep in mind that we are manufacturers of a very nice hive, family-owned business here, Long Lane Honeybee Farms. We've been making hives for about 3 years now. And our customers are very, very happy. We love to get you one of our hives. We follow the Langstroth's dimensions. We follow bee space religiously. Not just because we're Christians, but because we believe that if you don't follow bee space, it is of the devil. And those of you that have messed up your hive designs trying to make your own and you got the bee space off, you know what I'm talking about. 5/16 is critical. Sometimes we call it 3/8, you could even stretch it to a 1/4 inch maybe. But boy, you don't want to get that bee space off much or you're going to have a mess. Oh, I mean, all areas. So much goes into our hives that we make. And boy, do we make them. We're shipping out about 20 hives a week right now. That's two deeps, an inner cover, a super, and a screen bottom board, a top cover, and entrance reducing cleat, all the frames, a foundation to go with it. And so do get those orders in early. Please, please do us a favor, because if you wait until February and March and April, we'll be happy to make your hives for you. But at that time, there's usually a couple of weeks wait. And for those of you that just caught a swarm, or your package is coming the day after tomorrow and we have to tell you it'll be 2 weeks, it's not fun. So if you can make sure that you get all your equipment ready ahead of time, now that, you know, before it gets to be bee season, boy, that's just the prudent thing to do, all right? We are selling packages. Please consider giving us a call and placing your Package B order as soon as you can. The number to call to place your order for a 3-pound package with an Italian queen, a marked Italian queen. We sell those for $75 plus shipping, which is usually another $10, $10 or $11, depending on where you live. They'll be shipped to you USPS unless you request second day UPS for a few dollars more. We'll do that. But we are selling those. The number to call is 217-427-2678. All right, you got it? Package B, or if you want to order hives, or if you want to order a Nook or a Queen, the order line is 217-427-2678. And see, Sherry told me to tell you something about packages. What was that? Something? Oh, she said that some people are requesting they want their packages way earlier than they should receive packages. All right, so I'm going to explain it again. For those of you that didn't hear me say it the first time, here you go. If you get your package too early in the year, say the end of March, first week of April. Now, I know some of you live in the deep south. This may not apply to you. But for the rest of the world, north of the Mason-Dixon line, this is how it goes. Get them too early. you stand a good chance of losing them in the cold. And I can attest to that. I bought, one year I bought 20 or 30 Nooks, and I put them all out on the last week of March because the weather warmed up. It was so nice and warm, thunderstorms. I told you about this for those of you that are just good listeners. You'll remember the story. But the following week, it turned just bitterly cold for several days, and I lost half of my packages, and that's a lot of money. So you're going to take a gamble. You could win, but if you lose, you lose big. There's nothing you can do. Now, some of you are saying, but I thought bees could survive the cold. A full-size hive can, absolutely, when they've had all year to prepare. But when you take a package of 10,000 bees and try to put them in a hive with no foundation to keep warm, no wax, and you're just going to expose them to below freezing temperatures, taking a big chance. So Sherry wants me to tell you, and I concur with her, please wait. Be patient. You don't want to get your bees anytime before the second week of April, by any stretch. Those of you that are further north and in the real northern states, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin up there, man, you guys ought to wait till the end of May, middle of May maybe, middle to late May. Don't do it in April. Man, wow, it's just risky. So be patient. We go by what we feel is very wise in shipping out packages, and we don't ship them usually until the third or fourth week in April. All right? So when we tell you that, we're not trying to make you mad because you want them sooner. We're just trying to make you happy because we don't want you to lose them and be upset. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today to bring you today's edition of Studio B Live. We want to thank you for tuning in today. Don't just turn me off yet. I got a couple of things to say. Tell some friends about Studio B Live. And I'll tell you what, my wife and I produce these. We want to get to where we can produce these daily. Some of you have called in and said, hey, where's the next broadcast? I haven't heard one for a while. I know, we're trying. One of the ways that you can help us is call the Studio B Live question line, because when you ask questions, we're forced to answer them. We're forced to make another broadcast. And when you email us, we'll do the same thing. Email us at david@honeybeesonline.com, and you can call that question line at 217-427-2430. 217-427-2430. Ask your bee question. I think you get about 45 seconds, maybe a minute, so you kind of have to be brief. Say your name and your question, and we'll play it on our next broadcast and answer it and have fun with your question, all right? So you can help us out that way. Our website is honeybeesonline.com. We'd love for you to stop by and check out everything on our website. Well, it's been good being with you today, and we hope to produce another program coming up real soon, and we'll talk more about honeybees, and until we meet again, remember to behave yourself.